John 13, verses 34 and 35. John 13, 34 and 35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. You are also to love one another. By this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Going to be a little challenge this morning. I was telling John, since I have both talks today, this talk I had done by Friday night, and I completed my main sermon last night, and I printed out my main sermon last night after I finished with it, and put it in my folder, and put it in the car, and got here this morning and realized I never went back and printed out my first lesson. So thankfully, due to technology, I could access it my online drive on my phone. So we're going to be reading it off of, I'm going to be reading my notes off of my phone this morning, and I hope that it goes well, so forgive me if it doesn't. But for those of you who've been in this early session for the last couple months know what I've been teaching on. And so if you are an astute observer, you probably know where we're going this morning. We've been talking about one another, and how we are to treat each other, how we are to engage with each other, and been focusing on a lot of these different thoughts as being a family in Christ. We need to be concerned about what we've called, what we've been called to do, and what we've been commanded to do. So, based upon the passage that John read this morning, this is probably the most important command that we are given towards each other. Because if we don't have love towards each other, then none of the other things that we've talked about really stand much chance of working. You can't force yourself to have respect for each other and engage with each other if you don't have love for each other. So the characteristic of love is to be seen in everything that we do with each other. And just as in this passage that John read, just as Jesus loved us, we are to love one another. And so we recognize that by this comparison that we are called, that this isn't just like the way you might love baseball or you might love something. This is a love that we are to just be having towards each other in the way that Christ had a love so great that he sacrificed himself for us. And so the love is supposed to be so transforming that people who don't even really know us should be able to tell that we are disciples of Jesus by the love that we show each other. 1 Peter 1:22 tells us that we're to love one another with a pure and a sincere heart. And so that's how we should be approaching each other. Sincere is a key word there. It's not a contrived love. It's not a, well, I love you because I have to. Sincere means because we actually do. The Apostle Paul in the First Thessalonian letter taught to them about this need for them to love one another. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 9 and 10, Paul wrote to them, "Now concerning brotherly love, you have no need for anyone to write to you. For you yourselves have been taught by God to love one another. For that indeed is what you are doing to all the brothers throughout Macedonia." Paul's writing them about loving one another, but he says, "I'm writing to you, but I really don't need to. This is something that you have been taught already. You already know this, and you've been taught to love each other, and it was God that taught them this." They understood that loving one another was a very critical characteristic of what needed to be done. And if we don't love one another, then we can't prove that we are disciples of Jesus through that. Isaiah 54:13 says, "All your children shall be taught by the Lord, and great shall be the peace of your children." And 1 John 4:7-8 says, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God. And whoever loves has been born of God and knows God. Anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love." Love is every part of God. Our relationship with God is based on love. And he taught us the Isaiah passage. Your children shall be taught by the Lord about love. And that's how we should be handling that among each other. But not only were they loving each other in a way that one brother knew another brother loved them and so forth, we're told that they were so loving that the entire region of Macedonia knew what they were doing. And so, but there are ways that we show love to each other that we may be neglecting a little bit. Sometimes we can have a poor idea of what it looks like when we do love one another. But since Paul had no need to write about all the reasons why the Thessalonians needed to love each other, he instead teaches them some deeper applications of how their love for each other should be. And so if we continue on there in 1 Thessalonians 4, in verses 10 through 12, he says, "But we urge you, brothers, to do this more and more, and to aspire to live quietly, and to mind your own affairs, and to work with your hands as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one." Jesus said the world would know that we are his because we love one another. In John 13. What this means is it's dependent upon not just how we treat each other inside these walls, but it's how we treat others Monday through Saturday as well. That has an impact on what people think about us and how they think about Jesus impacting our lives. So loving one another is not something that only happens today when we come together. It's what we do when we're at home that has an impact to others. What we do while we're at work sends a message to those people that we see every day. What we do when we're engaged in our hobbies and our chores or, you know, whatever activities we have in our lives, it will say something to the world around us when we're doing them if we have love in our lives. And so Paul is observing these truths in these verses. So if we focus then mostly here in verse 11, Paul lists some things and encourages them, those of Thessalonica, what they should do. In verse 11, it says, we should aspire to live quietly. That should be what we strive in our life, is to live a quiet, peaceful life. Loving others means having that peace in our lives that allows us to be free from any hostility and any conflict. And living quietly means that we're not drawing attention to ourselves. We're not doing things to cause people to notice us in that regard. And that's completely opposite from a world that we're living in. For those of you who know what TikTok is, it's where people make little short videos and post them on their application. There's been a lot of conflict recently with people who are going to gyms and filming themselves working out, but then if someone happens to look at them, they get upset. "Oh, I'm just trying to work out here. Why are you?" Well, because they're making a fuss. They put lights up, and of course people are going to look. They're drawing attention to themselves to the point where hostility is occurring. And so that is something that we should not be doing. We shouldn't be drawing our attention. We shouldn't be looking for a crowd. We shouldn't be looking for that attention. We should not be desiring that people notice us and so forth. And so we can just avoid any conflict and any problems by doing that. People should get along with us because of the peace and the tranquility that we may have in our lives. I told this story before. When I was in high school, I worked in a grocery store bagging groceries. And being an immature kid, I didn't answer this the way I wish I had someone asked me this now. But she said, "Alan, you're always in a good mood. You're always smiling. You're always joking. You're always talking." And she said, Why? And I should have said, "Well, because I have peace and tranquility in my life, because I know I have the Lord in my life." That should have been something along what I said, but I said, oh, you know, if you complain, no one cares anyway, and you're, you know, so I just don't complain. This is kind of how my answer was, but I was noticed by being so different than everyone else. People do notice that, and that's because of the peace that comes, I think, because we know that we are His and we belong to His, and we are a disciple of His, and that come together and share that love. And so what Paul says is that we should make it our ambition to be quiet. And so if we apply that to the life of Jesus, I think we can all say Jesus lived His life according to that principle. Considering who He is and what He came to do, He really didn't make a lot of noise. He didn't draw attention to Himself. Matter of fact, when He would do a miracle, oftentimes He would say, no, don't tell anybody. Just go on your way. Don't tell anybody. That was not what He was seeking to do. He didn't cause trouble, or He didn't, you know, go out and, you know, sure, He upset the money changers twice, I think, or, you know, something along those lines, but that was because He was standing up for His Father's house. He wasn't just going out and causing trouble for the sake of drawing attention to Himself. And so trouble came, and attention was directed His way because of what He was doing, because of God's will that He was living His life and showing the glory of God through His teachings and action, teachings and His actions. That's what drew attention to Him. And so He didn't make a display of Himself intentionally, nor should we have that thought ourselves. So it should be our goal to live peacefully and quietly. Second, Paul says that we show love by paying attention to our own affairs. We don't need to meddle in our own affairs. I don't need to tell Harry and Brenda how they should mow their lawn, or tell John how he should cut his hair, or whatever the case may be. We shouldn't meddle with each other. We should not be nosy. We don't need to have the thought that we need to know what's going on with everybody else. It's just meddling is not love. Meddling is being self-serving. You're satisfying your own interests or curiosities, whatever the case may be. Basically, we can be preoccupied. We can spend a whole lot of time just wondering about what other people are doing. I mean, we all know people that you just have to be very careful about what you say to them, because you know it'll be all around to everybody that you know very shortly. There are people that just want to know what is going on in our lives, or their friends' lives, whoever the case may be. Everybody wants gossip. Everybody wants the details. And that is not what we should be doing if we have a genuine love and a genuine care for each other. But we want to be in the know, but by doing so, we're not exhibiting love. Really, what you should do is live your lives in such a way that people should want to come to you. They should want to open up, because they do understand. If they say something to us, we're not going to go, hey, did you hear what Mary said? Or did you hear what Joe said? Whatever the case may be. That's not how we build relationships, that by betraying their trust. But if you have that thought about you, that people understand that, then people are going to be willing to come and reveal something that maybe they're having trouble with. And that is the definition of love, where they know that if they come to you, they will be able to speak and share things with you. You know, there are things that some people just aren't ready to share yet. And there may be some things that we just can't maybe speak to others about, but we all have issues in our life. We all have hurt feelings. We all have different, you know, pain points in our lives. And people handle them in different ways and different times, but we shouldn't be out there trying to push people to reveal things. We shouldn't be trying to get them to open up before they're ready to. So we have to recognize this with each other. Unsolicited advice is terrible. People shouldn't be just telling people how to live their lives. We see an example of that really in the book of Job. How often did his friends tell him what he should have done or what he should be doing? And they were just really, they were not helping the situation. I think is a way to put it mildly. They were actually adding more stress into a very difficult situation for him. We're not Job, and we don't know each other's circumstances, and we shouldn't be trying to tell them what the right thing to do. It's pretty arrogant to say you have all the answers for anyone's life. If people ask you to tell them what we should do, we should just, or if people should ask us what they should do, I think we should always kind of frame it as, you know, I don't know all your situation, I don't know what, but these are some things that maybe I would recommend, but that's only if they come to you. And so we shouldn't be thinking that we have all the answers. That isn't love if we're trying to impose that upon people in their lives. The third thing that Paul tells us is that we are to work with our hands. Being idle and doing nothing is how a lot of people get in trouble. The saying, idle hands is the devil's playground, or something along those lines. I don't think that's scriptural, but that's something we've all heard. And a leading reason why sin enters a lot of people's lives is just because they're not active. They don't choose to do things that are productive, and they just stay idle. They're not working, they're not doing things. But if you think about it, not only does work help us stay focused, or maybe not focus on things that we shouldn't be, I should say, but work is something that God has given to us. Sometimes people think that in the garden, that work only came about after they were cast out of the garden. But before sin was in the world, listen to what God told them. Genesis 2:15. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it. Work isn't a punishment for sin that's been brought on the world, onto the world because of what happened in the Garden of Eden. Work was already there. People think, well, the Garden of Eden is such a, that would have been a great place to live. There still was work. There still were things for him to do. And later, when he was brought there, they were required to work there in the garden. And so all of us are to work. Does this mean that everyone needs to have a corporate job where you go Monday through Friday or whatever the case may be, and you do your job outside of the home, or you're working for someone else? Not necessarily. But men and women are to be kept busy with work. And even those that are maybe older, that are too old to work, Paul directs some thoughts towards them as well. In Titus chapter 2, verses 3 and 5, says, older women likewise are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good, and so train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. These people were older in life. They weren't probably capable of doing physical work at that point in time. And Paul is telling them, there are still things you can be doing. You can attend to those that are younger in your number, and you can be teaching them and teaching them how they should treat their families and so forth, how they should interact with them. And so with that in mind, that's how Paul is telling these people that they could still remain busy. We're to keep ourselves busy with work because doing nothing is frowned upon by the Lord. Whether we stay at home or retire or have some sort of physical difficulties in life that prevent us from doing, you know, full-time work or whatever the case may be, there's always something that we can be doing to keep ourselves occupied. The book of Proverbs is filled with warnings about idleness and laziness, that those things just lead to bigger problems in our lives. And so we always need to be looking to do good works, whether it's on the job, in our homes, with our neighbors, and maybe more importantly here in the church. But we have to do this because we can't allow our hands to grow idle. It's dangerous to our souls, and being lazy doesn't show love to anyone, if you get right down to it. Now, of these three things that Paul has just stated, he concludes by stating the reason why these instructions needed to be given. It was so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. God's purpose is that we should stay out of trouble and not need others to support us. Live quietly, mind your business, work with your hands. All these things are done so that you will not cause problems to those who are what Paul calls outsiders. And we will not be in need for others to have to take care of, whether it's financially or materially, something along those lines. And so, I think this is an important day as it's ever been, because our society is evolving into one where everyone's looking for a handout. Doesn't matter where you stand on the student loan forgiveness, those people are only doing it because they want a handout. They want something that would help take that burden off of them. But perhaps we fail to do that sometimes because maybe we've had people in our lives that have been there to bail us out. We need to examine ourselves to make sure that we're not doing that. And that if we are in that situation, we need to get busy, get working, so that we aren't a burden on others. So many people in this world today just want others to take care of it. But that way of thinking is sinful to the Lord. If we're not walking properly before the world, thinking this way, and we have to address it. We don't want to intrude or gossip or display diligence we want to display diligence in our work. And God says that we have to make the gospel credible by not being a burden on others. And we're showing another facet of love when we are doing these things. We are to live in such a way that others don't have to be concerned about us in many different ways. And we shouldn't be doing it to take advantage of love from others. The kindness and the generosity of others that comes along with love, we need to be loving and not take advantage of that situation. We should work with our hands and not be dependent upon others, because that's what loving each other does. If I love you, then I shouldn't want your money. I shouldn't be desiring and thinking of a way that I could get something from you. That's not love. I want to do my best to take care of myself is the attitude we should have. And we should be looking to take advantage of each other. This is the balance that we see in the first century church. Yes, people did sell their possessions and property and help each other. But this was not to be a replacement for work. This was just something that they recognized the situation was there, and they chose to do that. We don't find any occasion where someone was told to sell away their property. And so, we need to think of it that way. And in the second letter to the Thessalonians, Paul says this kind of in an even stronger way. In 2 Thessalonians 3, 10, and 11, he says, For even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let them not eat. For we hear that some among you walk in idleness, not busy at work, but busybodies. That's a pretty strong way for Paul to address this thought. We should be ready to help, but we shouldn't enable people that are trying to have it both ways. They want to love each other, but they don't want to do anything and want people just to help them. And so loving each other means that we should not be looking to do that. We shouldn't have idle hands. And going back to what we talked at the beginning, that's involving living a quiet life, just minding our own affairs. And we work with our hands so that the world will see that we are Christians because of the love that we show to each other. Going back to John 13 that John read for us this morning, all people will know we are Jesus' disciples because of the way that we love one another. This is just another way that we show this love, is that walking properly before those who are not Christians, that Paul called outsiders. and being dependent on no one will show that love. Loving others goes far deeper and much sometimes than we sometimes think about. And it isn't always spoken, it isn't always recognized, but love allows us to treat each other the way we should do. Just not here on Sundays, but Monday through Saturday. And by doing so, we'll show our love for not only one another, but for God and His Son who came and died for us. Brother Paul has the prayer, and when he is said he's done with that prayer, we will